This is the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast.
Where I'm at in my life and where I think part of the reason I've been able to grow and do so well so far is kind of prioritizing. Family comes first, business is second. Those are my main things I have time for. I love my business and I love my family, so I'm okay. I enjoy both of those things, so that is okay. I got some friends that golf quite often, and there's nothing wrong with that, but they don't have these big businesses, and maybe they don't want them, but even if they did want them, they couldn't do that because they have other things that take up their time. You know, 5 or 6 vacations a year kind of thing. Like, that's not me right now. Eventually, I hope it will be. Eventually, I'd like to golf 3 times a week and go on vacation, you know, a month at a time, 3-4 times a year, but I just don't have time for that. Like, something's got to give if I'm going to do that. It's not going to be my family. It's not going to be my work. So I'm just kind of, you know, in that. I feel like, you know, now maybe for 5 or 6 more years, just grind mode. Luckily, I enjoy it. I like working hard. I like working 10, 12 hour days.
You're listening to the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast, where we discuss tangible tips, tricks, and best practices for becoming financially free. The show is designed for people who want to either start real estate investing or for those who want to scale their real estate business.
What's up, guys? This is Jonathan Farber, host of the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast. This show is all about achieving financial freedom as fast as possible so you can do whatever makes you happy in life. For me, that vehicle was real estate, and it's how I achieved financial freedom at 27. If you want to know how I got started, my journey is presented in a YouTube video posted in the show notes, and I post daily in our private Facebook group about my favorite topics and day-to-day strategies. I appreciate you guys being here, and let's get started. Oh, by the way, reach out if you ever need help. I try to keep my calendar open to talk to anyone that needs it or has any quick questions. See you guys. Talk to you later. This episode is sponsored by Infinite Road Destinations, the smartest short-term rental property management group I know, and the group that manages my properties. This is a company that's very close to my heart, run by two of the smartest, most attentive people I know, Claire Rosenberg and Alex Brashears. Claire and I first met when we worked together at NetApp, where she was a top performer and rose crazy fast in the company. And Alex is just one of the most active, genuine people I know in the real estate space. The two of them together bring a blended background of project management, software design, and extensive experience with automation tools and virtual assistants. Through these experiences, they optimize any property to deliver a hands-off experience to owners while delivering the highest occupancy and highest daily rates possible. You guys know I would not recommend anything to anyone in this group that I do not fully endorse or think that is the absolute best product, and this company is that. And like I said before, this is the exact company and people that manage my Airbnbs. If you don't believe me, here are a few of the other tools and services that come along with the team. Listing optimization, guest support and approval, communication and reservations, key exchange and management, dynamic pricing, welcome kit creation, listing advertising and marketing, vendor management, including cleaners, maintenance, handyman, runners, and monthly property reports. To learn more, check out shorttermmadeeasy.com or email info@shorttermmadeeasy.com. And on the form, just mention that you heard it here or mention my name. So give it a try. You have nothing to lose, and they offer a satisfaction guarantee. And I assure you guys, you will not be disappointed. What's going on, guys? Today we have an awesome episode with Sam Prim. Sam and I first connected actually on TikTok, where he has over 1 million followers and he's just killing it on all social media, but it's because he's the real deal. Like, we'll get into everything today, what he does, how he does it, but he just has a directness about him that you'll hear, which is just no BS. It's just tactical information about how you can get started, scale a business, and also just how you can make money doing a lot of different things, including now social media. But a little bit about Sam. He is from St. Louis. He started real estate investing in 2014 while he was working in a full-time corporate job. So it started out as a side hustle, which we also talk a good amount about on the show. And now his business has really taken off. He does about 200 flips a year. He's got, I don't know the exact number of multifamily, but he's got quite a few multifamily buildings. He also has a couple hundred storage units that he's now scaled into in the last year and a half. And his business is just taking off. Like, he is doing all sorts of things. He's got about 20 people working for him on the wholesale and flip stuff. And now it's just really about getting the word out, educating people, raising more money, and just scaling the business. So it's really cool to see what he's done in a short period of time. And for anyone out there that's wondering how to get started while working a full-time job, that is all the things that we talk about today in this episode. So I think you guys are going to get lots of value out of that and just kind of dig into what Sam is all about. The main learning I had from this episode was, once again, the value of team and partners. Sam ended up partnering with one of his kind of high school friends, and they built the business together. They matched up perfectly with skill sets, and Sam basically just knew that he couldn't do this on his own and didn't want to do it on his own. So it's just cool to hear about how they found each other and then figured out roles and responsibilities to run the business. So for all the guys that are wondering if you should do it by yourselves or with a partner, Sam is another perfect example, someone that is doing it with a partner and now adding more partners to his business just to scale it. Today's tangible tip: a lot of you guys are wondering how to get attention right now, social media, all that. Right now, I got to say it, and it's how we connected, Sam and I, TikTok. Another way to get connected with people, learn about their content, learn about different strategies, but also to get a lot of attention yourself and network in the best way possible. Like the way that I connected with Sam was I just jumped on one of his lives, started talking. There were a bunch of other people on there, but just asking questions. And then I just asked him to come on the podcast. So that's a really cool way to just connect with people that you might not have the opportunity to, and lots of ways to collaborate with people. So if you don't have a TikTok account, that's, I guess, what this tangible tip is. Get on there, start networking with people, create some content, push yourself, and you'll be surprised what happens. So hope everyone enjoys. Have an awesome one. Sam Prim. All right, Sam, what is going on, man? Welcome to the podcast. I'm so pumped to have you here, bro. And I just got to say, I've been loving the content you've been putting out, man. One of the best I've seen over the last couple of weeks and months. And we were talking about it before, crossed a million on TikTok, bro. So that's sweet. But welcome to the show, man. How are you doing?
Doing well. I'm doing very well. I appreciate you having me. And if my stuff's some of the best you've seen, you must not be watching much, but just kidding. But appreciate it. I'm glad to be on and glad to get to know you a little bit better. And hopefully we can continue to do stuff like this in the future.
For sure. And, you know, that's a good segue too, man, you know, into your backstory of just what we were talking about before of you're putting out content. You weren't doing it, you know, from the beginning, but what drew me into your stuff was that it's just no BS. It's no fluff. It's just tactics. It's here's how I do this a day in the life. And these are the strategies. These are how you can get money. These are, you can buy apartment buildings or, you know, flip houses, that sort of stuff. So, you know, it's cool, man. It talks to people and, you know, we'll get into all of it, but, you know, I wanted to say that just that's been cool to see the growth, man. So, Sam, if you wouldn't mind, usually, we ask people if they could just kick off with a high level background on how you got into real estate. And then also from a high level, where you're at with it today.
Yeah, for sure. So, I got started in real estate in 2014, 2015 timeframe. I graduated from college in 2000, corporate route, had a corporate job, didn't really see that, satisfying my internal entrepreneurship, my drive, my competitive spirit, my just want to not have a cap on what I can or can't do. So I kind of started to feel that after a few years in the corporate gig. I was doing very well and making some pretty good money, but it wasn't going to be enough for me. I didn't want to retire when I was 55 with, you know, $3-4 million in a 401k. I wanted to retire whenever I wanted, and I wanted to be able to hand down tens of thirties, if not hundreds of millions, down to my family and affect generations down the line, not just, you know, give my daughter a couple million when I pass away. So I wanted to create an impact, and having that corporate job just wasn't going to do it. And it doesn't do it for anybody unless they have CEO next to their title or the last name of the person who owns the company. So that was kind of started to do that on the side in 2014-15 with my business partner, Lucas. We started to build rentals, did a few wholesales, did a few rehabs. And then, you know, 4 years later, 2018, we both quit our jobs and went full-time into real estate. Now company Faster House, that we flipped 204 houses last year. We're probably gonna do like 220 this year. A majority of them are wholesales. Probably 70% are wholesales. The rest we flip or keep as rentals. Currently we're sitting at a rental portfolio of 140 residential rental doors, a mix of single family rentals and a few apartments in there. And also we have gotten to the storage facility game, sitting at about 250 storage facility doors. So kind of diversifying in those three platforms for the long-term growth, and then the fix and flips and wholesales kind of for the short-term income. So kind of went in hard and heavy after we realized this is what we wanted to do. And things have been going pretty well. Obviously there's ups and downs, but overall pretty happy that got rid of the corporate gig.
So one thing that I always like to ask people about or think about is, you know, if they're more in the camp of build a side hustle while they have a job, or if they're in the camp of kind of burn the boats and put your back against the wall and just go for it. I talk to what I've done and known, and I built a little bit more of the side hustle route, you know, just trying to add units while I have a job, making it easier to get loans. And it sounds like you kind of did the same. Was that something you were consciously thinking about? Like in your head, where you're like, oh, I'm using this job to grow my business. Or do you look back and wonder if you should have left the job before and maybe you could have scaled faster?
Yeah, great question. A little bit of both. Honestly, I'm not one of those guys. I'm similar to you that wants to just jump in the pool head first and you figure out if there's water or not in and on the way down kind of thing, you know, like kind of like a Grant Cardone or, you know, some of those people that are just go for it. Burn the boats is a great way to describe it. So that wasn't me. I'm a little more strategic, a little more, you know, wanted to have a basis of income coming in, wanted to have a couple deals in the pipeline when I quit my job because I enjoyed my job. I was making like $250,000 a year, you know, when I was 25, 26 years old, and I liked it okay. It just didn't scratch every itch for me and it didn't allow the long-term growth that I wanted. So I wasn't one of those people that hated their jobs. Like my business partner, Lucas, who's partners with me and everything, he was an engineer and he hated it. So he wanted to get out as quickly as possible. But being the engineer type, he kind of wanted all his ducks in a row as well. So yeah, I'm more of those, started that side hustle, learn what you like, what you don't like, make the connections. Exactly what you said, you're more bankable with that W-2 job, you know, having that for a couple of years. And then when the time's right, then make that leap and take control of your financial future. Because we talked a little bit about COVID, you know, a lot of really good companies laid off a lot of people last year, short-term and long-term, because of things out of their control. So yeah, you're not going to be able to control your finances unless you're the one that's, you know, creating the income.
So true. Such a good point. When you look at your start and then your ramp up, it was very quick. And I would say it was very, it was high growth. You know, for a lot of people there, you probably hear it a lot too. You know, people that say, I just want one single family house for the next couple of years and then I'll be out. And you know, that could work. It could not work. But for you, what do you think the difference was of being able to scale so quickly? I mean, 2014 wasn't that long ago. And then even what you did, you know, from like in the chunks of 14 to 18 and then 18 to now, I mean, the growth is massive. So for you looking back, what do you think some of the differences were, the keys were for giving yourself the ability to scale that quickly?
Yeah, a couple of them are strategic partnerships. My business partner, Lucas, and all my rentals and the flipping company and everything, he, you know, is very, you know, we're both very competitive. I think having that competitive spirit and, you know, always growing up playing sports and always kind of wanting to be the best is part of it. But just having that strategic partnership of, you know, you're good at this, I'm good at this, let's combine forces and do more together. I'm a little bit more negotiating, sales, marketing. He's more systems, processes. And if I didn't have the system and processes, you know, I would be, you know, swimming and I wouldn't know what to do. And if, you know, he didn't have me out there getting the deals, he wouldn't have anything to do with those systems. So having that strategic partnership, and then when we partnered with a gentleman named Brian and our flipping company, Faster House, the one that, you know, is our active income that buys a couple hundred houses a year. Just having those partnerships was big. And then kind of a pro and a con I've started to realize with self-reflection and trying to, you know, always be better is, you know, never being satisfied is really big for me that I'm realizing. It's good and it's bad. You know, never being satisfied, always wanting more is a good thing. It is always driving me. That video did that good. Well, might want my next video to do better. Or, you know, we made this much money. I want to make this much money now. So always want more is good. And I think that's the biggest reason for the growth aside from the partnerships. But then I'm realizing got to have some happy medium. You got to be able to kind of be content with what you've done and what you're doing. And, you know, being able to just take in what you've done and not always be looking ahead. Like we just recently on Friday, actually last week, we did a $1.4 million cash out refinance. We took out $1.4 million from our rental portfolio tax-free, paid off some lenders, paid off three houses, took a big chunk of cash in ourselves and put some in the bank. And we didn't really celebrate it. We're just like, all right, on to Monday, getting up, being at work at 6 or whatever. So just being able to, having that, you know, ever desire to want more is good, but I'm also seeing there's kind of some negatives to it as well.
For sure. It's like the best and worst thing about, you know, like high performers, you know, from speaking to a lot of people, it's like the reason you do it, but you get the trophy in your hand. You're like, what's next? You know, we will come back to that. I want to definitely circle back on that cash out refinance just because that's insane and tax-free money. People are always, you know, ears perking up for that. But I just didn't want to skip over talking about partnerships for a sec. This is something that I see a lot of my group, people get stuck on or struggle with or, you know, have a bad experience and kind of look back and regret it. So how do you think about partnerships? You know, you mentioned a little bit of kind of having like a shared skill set, but how did you meet your partners? And then how did you figure out at the beginning if you guys were going to be good fits working together and, you know, like assigning roles and all that?
Yeah, for sure. So my partner and everything, Lucas, we've been friends since middle school. You know, went to high school together, went to college together. We had a painting business in college. You know, over the summers we would paint exteriors of houses, and you know, so we had worked together at a decent capacity. We lived with each other through all those crazy college years, so we knew each other pretty well, and we always kind of knew that friendship came first. We both felt like we'd be successful whatever we did. So the money would come, but we can make more money together. And then, you know, as long as we put that friendship first. And honestly, at first we were both doing everything. We both would analyze every deal. We both would, you know, I'd try to help him on the systems or accounting things, and he would go to all the houses with me. So we both were doing it all together at first. And then I think part of what really got that growth is when we, you know, trusted, we always trusted each other, but just kind of divided and conquered. Like, he doesn't look at stuff that I look at, I don't look at stuff that he looks at. That allows us to get so much more done and each kind of grow our separate companies. We're each owner of all the companies that we own together. I think we own four together, but we're each doing our own roles in those companies and letting the other person kind of do what they do best and not, you know, trying to figure out and all do it together. So I think that's the big part of it. And as far as other people finding partners, I think a lot of it is, you know, having, you know, hopefully they're friends, you know, first, making sure that friendship comes first, because it's tough mixing friends and money. But I think the best business partners are usually friends, if you can have that right person that's, you know, people before profit kind of thing. It's a tricky thing to get into, but I think with the right partner, everyone on here can do so much more than they can do on their own.
For sure. You know, it's like that, what's that expression, you know, like together we can go, I forget it, but you can go faster, you know, and scale more together when you have other people, and, you know, you can delegate and split up your time, what you're good at versus what they're good at. Okay. I do want to come back to that cash out. Oh, what's that?
I was like, kind of like that one plus one equals three kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like you just see it. And then I think when people learn more about business, they realize that even if someone is the face of something, they're not doing it alone. You know, they just might be better at marketing and better at public speaking, but there's either a person or a team behind them. And it sounds like even in your business, that's a role that you're taking on. You're great at educating people. You're great at kind of explaining things in simple terms and good at marketing and branding. And, you know, your partners may be able to do that. Maybe that's not their best or highest use, right?
You're 100% right. Yeah. So for that flipping company, Faster House, that's Luke's company. I mean, I own it with him, but he is running it. He's managing, he's the leader of it. I stopped going to meetings. I still know what goes on, but I don't even go to the weekly meeting with that. You know, I'm involved in our rentals at a high level, but as far as our flips and wholesales, I couldn't tell you the last 50 houses we bought. So, you know, having that, you know, have that much of a passive income source where he does that. And then he's on my content every once in a while, but I'm kind of running this stuff over here. So yeah, I agree. Just having those, each person kind of do their best use of their time. Cause yes, he could be really good at doing social media and building a brand. He's a very personable guy, but that's not necessarily the best use of his time. The best use of his time is doing what he's doing, growing that company. And right now the best use of my time is growing this company and growing the brand, and who knows what we'll do in the future. I don't think we'll each be in these roles forever, but for now, we're kind of growing our company separate but together.
For sure. Okay. Yeah, I mean, there's just so much there, but after speaking to people on this podcast and, you know, just people have heard me ask those questions, it's not always the best route to just kind of bare knuckle something yourself. So doing it with partners and figuring out what you're good at is such an important thing. I guess kind of just going down that path too. I guess I'd say I'm a little bit of a productivity nerd. Like, I feel like with anyone in business, you want to try to make good use of your time and figure out what you should be doing every day and what you can delegate, and, you know, it becomes fun. So for you, I'm curious, you've got companies, you've got big social media followings, you know, you're active in the business. How do you manage your time, or how do you think about, you know, your time on a pie chart, or kind of like, you know, if you look at your calendar, just any things that you think about actively or best practices you have for managing your time personally?
Yeah, for sure. So I think about this a lot, actually. I feel like ideally I would be able to spend, you know, a large chunk of my time on work, a large chunk of my time with my family, and then a decent chunk of my time golfing and doing a lot of things that, you know, outside of work and family that I would enjoy. But where I'm at in my life and where I think part of the reason I've been able to grow and do so well so far is kind of prioritizing. Family comes first, business is second. Those are my main things I have time for. I love my business and I love my family. So I'm okay. I enjoy both of those things. So that is okay. I got some friends that golf quite often, and there's nothing wrong with that, but they don't have these big businesses, and maybe they don't want them, but even if they did want them, they couldn't do that because they have other things that take up their time, you know, 5 or 6 vacations a year kind of thing. Like, that's not me right now. Eventually, I hope it will be. Eventually, I'd like to golf 3 times a week and go on vacation, you know, a month at a time, 3 or 4 times a year, but I just don't have time for that. Like, something's got to give if I'm going to do that. It's not going to be my family. It's not going to be my work. So I'm just kind of, you know, in that. I feel like, you know, now maybe for 5 or 6 more years, just grind mode. Luckily, I enjoy it. I like working hard. I like working 10, 12 hour days and then I'd spend the rest of the time with my family. So I think that's kind of what it boils down to, honestly, is I'd like to be productive too. No one likes to waste their time. I hate to waste my time. So I just prioritize work and family. And then if I have time for the extra fun stuff, which I keep saying, I enjoy my work and family. So that's fun for me too. But the outside of those two things, fun stuff, that's pretty limited right now. Like, I haven't golfed in 1.5 months, which is fine, but I would love to golf every day. Just kind of prioritizing right now, if that makes sense.
That makes total sense. I guess just digging into that, you know, one layer deeper, is there anything you're doing, you know, to just like tools or systems or methodologies, you know, like calendar, like, the, you know, if you plan your weeks, or if there's any like time management system that you follow, or is it just, you know, you kind of in your head know these are our big projects, I know what I should be doing for each of them?
Yeah, so I need to be more organized about it for sure. Like, looking back at how much work and effort I'm putting into this education business, we're not super profitable. We make decent money, but we could be doing a lot more. And we just kind of had a meeting, it's funny talking about this, 2 days ago, where we had a boot camp coming up at the end of August. We were launching a lower price point product. We have our rental course that we have. We were trying to do a lot, and we literally just canceled the boot camp at the end of August, just because we were doing too much and trying to do too many things. And I'm not super system and process oriented like I should probably be to be a better leader for my company. So we're just simplifying things, going back and just focusing on one thing at a time and do that one thing really, really well, and then move on to other things. Which is hard for me because, you know, our 5-year vision is to be top 5 real estate investing brands in the country in 5 years. So that's really hard to do with one product. You got to be able to reach people. So I want to have this plethora of products that, as well as social media, you know, presence that gives away free information. And then if people want the next layer, they can. But just learning to take a step back before you take a step forward. On my slide, it was, you know, if you build it, they will come. Feel the dreams thing. We got to build it first before we try to monetize it too much. So, yeah, I don't have like a specific like Calendly app or, you know, anything like that that, you know, really utilize my time well. I just have a good team that I have a team that I can grow very well with that, you know, I don't need to make a hire for probably a year or two. I kind of got an overabundance of human capital right now, which is okay, but it'll help me grow much better. So just kind of taking things one day at a time and not trying to do too much, as I've learned a lot over the past 6 months. Probably.
For sure. And it's a funny line. It's kind of a, you know, a balance between so many people, I think, get stuck in the details. They're like, oh, I don't have a project management tool. I don't have a website. I can't do this business. I'm like, dude, yes, you can. You could use a piece of paper and a pen and a spreadsheet. Like, don't let that detail trip you up. And I feel like a lot of people, it's like, you know, cart before the horse a little bit with that stuff, that they think they need it and they really don't. And clearly you're an example that, like, no, you don't need that stuff. Like, you're going to build it as you go. You're going to add people. You'll add systems as you need it. You know, we'll talk about stuff for like the wholesale and the flipping. I'm sure you have process involved. But again, you don't need all that stuff figured out beforehand. You can build it as you go and kind of just, you know, see what you need and works best for you. It's different for everyone.
Yeah, we just go. Even Lucas is the process system guy. I remember specifically in May or June of 2018, I was looking at bank statements in January of 2017, trying to get my taxes together for our accountant for all the things we had done. So, like, literally our 2017 taxes that were due, business taxes were due March of 18, personal taxes April of 18. We hadn't even given our accountant one piece of paper until the summer of 18. So that's not ideal, obviously. I'm sure we paid more taxes than we should at that time. Now we have a bookkeeper and a controller. We have all those now, but yeah, we just went out and did it. And I'm not saying everybody should do that, but it helped us grow so much faster than, you know, every single week making sure our books were in order. Shoot, I mean, we didn't look at our books till, 6 months after the year was over. So yeah, it just kind of, you know, kind of came for a circle. Now I feel like people just need to grow. And then, you know, you'll figure things out as you go. But if you're trying to have every T cross and I dotted, it's going to be tough to grow. If you're wanting to grow and scale, not everybody wants that. If that's what you're wanting, it's going to be pretty tough to do if you're trying to have everything buttoned up.
For sure. Just want to circle back to that that nice little Cash App refinance. For those that don't know what that means or how that works, can you just explain what a Cash App refinance is and how it worked with that deal of taking out over $1 million tax-free? I'm sure people would love to understand that.
Yeah, for sure. So a cash out refinance is simply, you know, taking cash out of your equity in that property. A lot of people do it in their like residential house that they live in. You know, their house is worth $300,000. They owe $100,000. So they, you know, if they can pull out, depending on the bank, but you can pull out, you know, money from that, and you pull out money from that, but then you know, that goes on the loan. So you are paying interest on it, the money that you pull out, but it's not taxed. And that interest rate's hopefully 3 or 4%, you know, spread out over 30 years. So it's not a big payment. And you can do a lot with that money, you know, that however much you're taking out, you can do a ton with that, hopefully to make way more than 3% you're paying on it. But as far as our tax out refinance, I don't have the exact numbers, but it was something like, for simple math, our portfolio was worth $16 million, which I think it's worth a little more than that. But for round numbers, our rental portfolio market value is $16 million. And, you know, for the simple math, we owed, let's say, $8.5 million on that $16 million rental portfolio. So we took our loan from $8.5 million up to $10 million. So now we owe $10 million, but that $1.5 million that we were able to take out, we got as, you know, just cashier's check written to us. And it's debt now because we have a loan on it. You know, we're paying it over 30 years. We actually got a lower interest rate, so it ended up cash flow going up. But we took that money out, and it's not taxed because it's debt. It's a loan. So debt is not taxed. So that's why it's not taxable. You know, we do pay it, you know, have to pay it monthly as a part of our loan now. But the beautiful thing about rental properties is the loan's getting covered by the tenant, not me. So we're getting that covered, plus cash flow, plus all the other expenses. And like I said, our cash flow actually went up because we got the interest rate, you know, down to, you know, under 4 over 30 years and fixed for quite a while. So it ended up, you know, helping for cash flow now. And we pulled out that cash. Now, we could have taken advantage of those terms and not pulled out the cash. But like I said, at that $1.5 million, we're putting a ton aside to have a big security net in the bank, paid off some lenders, and then we paid off 3 houses. So now we own 3 houses free and clear that we're going to actually pull on lines of credit on, and we're going to lend to our other businesses and other people and make money on the equity of the paid off houses. So we're kind of trying to get some security and having paid off houses. You know, having a paid off house is pretty secure, and then we have lines of credit against it that we can loan out and make a little extra money as well.
If anyone does not understand cash out refinances and the value of value add multifamily, just rewind that last part 5 minutes and just listen to it on a loop, because that is the beauty of multifamily and value add investing in that space, because you can use commercial debt, you can increase the value of the properties, and then if you execute the right way, you can pull out all that equity tax-free. You don't have to sell the property, and you still keep the asset that's going to cash flow every month. So just such a powerful technique. So that's just sweet that you're able to, you know, build it and pull it off. And then, you know, now you can use that money for other things. Cool to hear you're lending on it, and you can use it for savings and all these other sorts of things. So just like a really powerful technique. I guess just on the back end of that, I have a bunch of questions teed up just for like tactics of the flip business, just because I think it might be a little bit more tailored for our space. But for you right now in your business, seeing something like that with, you know, a bigger project, do you, in your mind, have any preference or kind of idea, you know, or goal where you think you'll be or want to be with the business, you know, in a year or two, if it's more maybe multifamily or larger portfolios, or, you know, do you still see the flipping and wholesaling business kind of being, you know, a big driver for the business?
Yeah, I think we're still in growth mode for everything. So the goal for the flipping company is to flip 333 houses in 3 years and 500 houses in 5 years. So we're going to continue to grow those. We're actually kind of hiring leaders in those companies to kind of run the companies. So not really super active for me or even Lucas going forward in the near future, but definitely continue to grow those companies. We got a ton of incredible employees. I think the flipping company is sitting at about 20 employees now. So want to continue to help them grow. And a lot of them are growing rental portfolios as well because they see the power in it. So that's going to continue to grow. As far as our rental goes, yeah, I think our goal in 5 years is to have 500 doors, not including storage. So we're going to do that. But I think what's going to end up happening is I think we're going to get into some, we're going to start a fund and kind of just do this on a higher level. Like right now, I'll raise, you know, $500,000 to put down on an apartment complex. We'll buy the apartment complex, and then, you know, in 3 or 5 years, we'll refinance and pay off the lender. And now we own the apartment complex free and clear. That's what we're doing at, you know, right now. That's kind of was the next step. I think the next step is buying like $20 to $50 million apartment complexes with a, you know, a legitimate fund and doing the same thing in 3 to 5 years, refinancing, paying them off. But instead of owning a 50 unit apartment complex, we'll own a 350 unit apartment complex. So just kind of continue to scale and grow to that next level, because kind of the side effect of the social media following I've been getting is a lot of people message me wanting to know how they can invest with or in me. And we don't have that right now. So I think kind of starting that fund, and I wasn't really super excited about syndication, which is, you know, just raising funds and buying a $10 million apartment complex and getting 2% ownership and paying a fee to do that. That doesn't excite me. But what excites me is raising that money, you know, and putting that down on apartment, and then just doing what we're doing, but at a bigger scale. And then in 3 or 5 years, pay them off for that refinance we talked about, and then owning that building free and clear, and really creating that like crazy massive, like, almost uncomprehendable type of wealth is kind of the goal now.
That is really interesting. I feel like that could be a whole separate topic, but it's funny, man, because my goal at the beginning of this, you know, my idol and like mentor in this was Joe Fairless. And I thought syndication was the path. And I started reaching out to tons of syndicators. And honestly, when I got close to them, a lot of them didn't even like what they were doing. They didn't like the model. They were complaining all the time. And I was like, no, I don't think I want to do this. So that's cool to hear that that's a different version of it, where you could still raise money, but it's supporting projects you're kind of already doing. And then you can not shake the investors, but you can keep control of the asset and probably make way more money in the long run anyway. So like, that's just cool to hear. I haven't heard a lot of people say that. We've had a lot of syndicators on the show, less lately, because, you know, I don't think like it's our audience, but that's pretty cool to hear. I don't think I've ever heard anyone say that. Like, is that something that you kind of just were thinking about as it was happening, or did you know that from the beginning a little bit more?
Well, kind of funny, we just kind of talked about this weekend with Lucas. He came over and he's kind of wanting to get a syndication. That's kind of his next thing. He loves raising money. He loves, you know, managing, you know, we have a few million now, but, you know, not like a big fund. He loves doing that. So he wanted to get into that. And I was like, I'm not super excited. I'll do it with you. I'll help raise it. But I don't want to raise, you know, $20 million and own $100 million worth of real estate and own 2% of it. That's just not that exciting. I know it. So, and he's like, no, he's like, we're gonna. And so this was kind of funny. It's a joke we're talking about right now. He's like, no, we'll do what we're doing now with our $4 million apartment complex we're buying. You know, we raised $1 million. And then in 5 years, we're going to pay that $1 million off, and we're going to own that, you know, free and clear. We already own 80% of it, but we'll own 100% of it. He's like, we're just going to do that. Just add a zero or two. And I was like, yes, that excites me. Owning owning $100 million, $200 million worth of real estate, not super, you know, active at first, because we'll probably take a smaller fee and we'll probably help get the investors in, but then they're getting their 10 to 12% return back in 3 to 5 years, and then we're gonna own it. So that's that kind of just kind of started to come around. Apparently, Lucas claims that's been his plan all along. I mean, it has been probably, but I didn't realize that was the plan until this weekend. So yeah, so I'm pretty excited about doing that and seeing where that goes. That probably is a year or two out, but that'll be kind of fun. Next level owning that much. That's kind of the only way that somebody like me and you that didn't inherit hundreds of millions of dollars can own that much real estate. You kind of got to go about it that way if you're going to be actually the owner of it.
That's cool, man. I'm excited to see where that goes. And the part two and part three is going to be fun when we have you back on. Just before we get you out of here, we'd love to just go through a couple kind of rapid fire stuff, some tactical kind of nuts and bolts stuff for what you're doing in the flipping business, or just, you know, like systems within that. So I guess just kicking off, you know, big question, I'm sure you get a lot, and, you know, we see it all the time. What are your marketing channels, you know, deal finding, or, you know, what ways are you finding deals right now? What are some of your favorites?
Yeah, so our favorites, so like I said, we're probably gonna buy 220 deals this year, and 125 of them, maybe more, are gonna be from $0 in marketing spend. We're really, really, really big on networking. You know, we're gonna buy 60 houses this year from real estate agents, probably 40 from wholesalers. Like, we have a whole training for our sales guys. We have 4 full-time sales guys and 3, 1099 guys that are kind of, you know, part-time. And we train them and teach them networking. You know, we talk to agents and other wholesalers and mold remediators. We buy like 5 houses a year from a bowling alley owner. He writes, you know, Ben buys houses above his lanes. It's a small bowling alley. And he is in the leagues and talking to the people, and life happens. People's parents pass away. People need a move. People move their parents to assisted care facility. Just getting our name in front of as many people as possible that know people. So when life happens, they need to get rid of their house because, you know, 19 out of 20 houses are going to go to an agent and sell in perfect condition. But that one out of the 20, we want that brought to us. So that's our favorite by far. Our acquisition guys spend time doing that, but it's no money to us. As far as our paid sources, Drive for Dollars has done pretty good for us. Direct mail, SEO, our company's been around a little while, so we got a pretty good SEO presence, search engine presence. But yeah, I mean, you know, that we're always tinkering with marketing, always tinkering. We've done, you know, cold calling, we've done text messaging. We haven't had a ton of luck with that, but our biggest main channels are gonna, and we've done some TV now. Biggest main channels are that, you know, direct mail, and then that, you know, that networking that doesn't really cost any money, just some human capital time.
Got it. That is really cool, man. I've never really heard of someone that, like, you know, has such a big business, but not putting, you know, so much effort into paid marketing. So that's really interesting. I think people are going to get a lot of value out of that. I guess just kind of going down that path a little bit more, if someone was looking to start or think about, you know, not having a big marketing budget, you know, maybe they're a 22-year-old and they got time and they're ready to hustle, but they don't have a lot of money to start hiring virtual assistants and, you know, pay for softwares, and they just want to get after it. What would you do if you were 22 and didn't have a lot of money?
I was that not too long ago, but yeah, I would network. This is the number one thing I would do. I would go to your local real estate investing meetup groups. We have one that has 150, 200 people come every month. People are buying houses there. They're selling houses there. Hard money lenders are there. Private money lenders, real estate agents. Everybody in the space is there, and almost every town has them. People just might not know about them. So go to your local meetups, get to know people, join the local online Facebook groups. They're kind of becoming spammy these days, but there's still good investors in there. So those are two free things you can do just to get in front of people and get in front of other types of people that are in the space. Call all those Weeb Ugly Houses signs you see on the side of the road. Those are all wholesalers, to get to know them, get on their list. Just get your name out there as much as you can. Post about it on your Instagram and Facebook. If young kids even have Facebook these days, you know, a couple times a month, just you're looking for deals. And then if they want to spend a little bit of money, I would suggest that Drive for Dollars. It's, you know, you can usually, depending on what company you use, you can usually get, you know, $50 to $100 a month, and then you can go out and just drive and look for distressed houses. So if I didn't have, you know, that much money, I'd spend most of my time networking and then probably driving for dollars. Cause if you send mail lists, you're going to have to send it five times at, you know, $2,000 to $3,000 a pop to actually get any amount of deals that can add up to anything. So if you're looking to buy 5-10 houses a year, you can 100% do that just by networking, getting to know people in the space.
That's cool, man. That's a different approach for sure. I didn't even ask when we first jumped on, but is the business that you're doing now local to your market, or are you doing anything virtual or outside of your market? I know you mentioned you have, you know, a decent amount of employees now. Is that kind of how you're touching different, you know, parts of the market? Just would love to hear what that looked like.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, it's all local, all in St. Louis. So I know a lot of people do virtual, and we may get in that in the future. I like being able to drive and see it, and, you know, you have to obviously have boots on the ground if you're going to be virtual. But no, we're all local, all in St. Louis. You know, we have 4 full-time buyers. Like I said, a couple part-timers, and we have a, you know, marketing person at dispositions that sells all the houses to wholesalers, and then a retail one as well. And just kind of have that rounded out team, but it's all here in St. Louis.
Okay, cool. I guess just kind of going through the last parts here, I got to touch on social media, man. We talked about it before. You've blown it out, man. Like, it's just crazy how quickly you've grown. When you think about social media, one, what has it done for your business, if anything? You know, you said money or people looking to invest, but is there any surprises or like benefits that you weren't really expecting? And then I have a couple questions just about how you think about like setting it up and all that. But, you know, what has it done for your business? And, you know, like, what's been kind of your main strategy or tactic kind of going out and putting content out there?
For sure. Yeah. So it hasn't really helped like our flipping business at all, but our education business for sure has. So it just really helped get people in the funnel. If I can give as much free, legitimate information as I can, people will, you know, the usual path is I saw you on TikTok, went to your Instagram, went to your YouTube, learned a crap ton. I bought a deal or did something learning from all the free stuff you've given me. Do you have more? How can I pay you to help me even more? Because you've proven yourself for free. I don't mind spending, you know, $5,000, $3,000, whatever it is. I don't mind spending a few grand on your services if you could help me get to that next level because you've proven yourself. So that's kind of the social proof of it. So many people say they've done their first deal or done deals just for my free advice. So that's a pretty darn good warm up as to, here, I'll give you some money now, even especially because, you know, we charge so damn little for our services. But yeah, that's kind of just the path people have generally taken. And it seems to really work. Just getting our name, the more people that know your name and your brand, the better it's going to be, especially if you're legitimately trying to help people like I am. And you do have, you know, a service that they can opt into if they select to.
Okay. And just the last question, social media related, is that something you're just doing on your own? Do you have help with it? Any, you know, social media managers, or, you know, what does it look like for you? Is it, you know, you're going to just spend some time each week knocking out TikTok videos, you're going to do a YouTube video? Because again, I think some people watching, they may get stuck. They're like, you know, I don't know where to start. I can't, you know, I'm shy in front of a camera too. I don't know how to make, you know, hours of content. So just any comment on that for anyone that might be kind of stuck or just wondering, how do I get started? Do I need to hire people? Do I just start talking in front of a camera? You know, like, what should I do?
Yeah, just start talking in front of your phone for sure. So Instagram and TikTok are all me. I'm the one that's making them, creating them. Usually try to do, you know, one or two a day for each on the stories, answering questions. So that's kind of, you know, like I said, we got a pretty good team now in all the companies. So that's what I can focus on because that's the best use of my time for the immediate future. So I'm, that's all me. And then as far as our YouTube goes, we have, we've hired out, you know, a VA editing videos. Currently, we have an in-house video producer that edits and does stuff in-house. You know, I kind of think of the content and kind of shoot it. So it doesn't take a ton of my time, but it does take time. So I would say if you were willing to spend an hour or so a day on Instagram and TikTok, I'd start there, get a following, then maybe move to YouTube. It's much harder to grow an audience on YouTube and even Instagram than TikTok. So I would for sure start out with TikTok and then move on to Instagram because they're not expecting clean, perfect audio, everything edited. Lighting. People expect everything to be perfect on YouTube. They don't necessarily on TikTok, especially, or even Instagram. So start on your phone. And then as you get that audience, then I would move into YouTube. I started with the YouTube first. Going looking back, I would have done Instagram and TikTok and then maybe launched a YouTube channel about 6 months ago. But I kind of did it the other way and it's working okay. But yeah, I mean, you don't need to be polished. I don't love always having the phone in my face or camera in my face, especially at first, but it's something you get used to. And it's never going to hurt to have a brand around you or your business. That's the wave of the future, creating a following. I'm sure me, Kevin's running for governor because he was a YouTuber. He wouldn't be doing that if he wasn't a YouTuber. And, you know, I'm very good friends with like Ryan Pineda and Kong, Wholesale to Millions. And it just doesn't hurt to have a following of people following you. It's the wave of the future. You used to have a TV and, you know, be on like Channel 4 to be famous or be like a celebrity, like a, you know, a music artist or a baseball player. You don't have to do that anymore. You can have a phone and you can become a celebrity like that. So I just think that's super powerful to grow that following. And I would encourage everybody to do it.
So true, man. Mentor of mine just says it all the time. He's like, I don't want to see your resume. He's like, just let's see your content. Let's see your brand. You know, what value are you putting out? He's like, resume is bullshit. He's like, that's a piece of paper. It doesn't even say anything. What's your pedigree? Are you putting out content? That shows you're putting in the work. If you're making so much content and then documenting your actual business, people can get to know you. So Sam, it's really cool, man. I feel like we could keep going, man. I could keep peppering you, but for the sake of time, you just dropped so much tactical knowledge, man. I just got to say thank you for coming on. What is the best way for people to check you out on social media, learn more about your companies, your brand, your businesses, or projects you have coming up?
For sure. Yeah, just follow me. Sam Faster Freedom, one word, Sam Faster Freedom on TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram. Those are my three platforms. Currently probably going to be launching a podcast, and I'll have you on, I'm sure, when we launch that here in a few months. But right now, those are the three main platforms. And if you want to interact with me, I'm much more active on Instagram Messenger than anything else. So, you know, hit me up there. Make sure to follow me. We talked about, I try to give as much free advice as I can. And then our website, fasterfreedom.com, as well, to learn a little bit more about our products and such. But definitely start with the socials. If you like it, then, you know, DM me or go to our website and see if you want more.
Guys, no joke. You know, I don't say this about every guest. Check him out on social media. It is some of the best content, no fluff, no bullshit tactics about how to start your business and scale your business. Sam, thank you so much for coming on, man. Look forward to staying in touch.
Hey, you millennial millionaire. Are you looking for help getting to the next level in real estate? Are you looking for accountability and strategy to achieve your goals? If so, Jonathan is now taking on one-on-one students and opening a few spots in his private mastermind. It's affordable and welcome to everyone. If you had any questions or think you may need a boost, send Jonathan a message on Facebook or email at johnjfarber@outlook.com.